Professor McDonald, welcome to Microscopio.
Thank you.
In this interview, we wanted to talk about superbugs and what is the definition of hospital-acquired infections?
Well, hospital-acquired infections are infections that occur after you've been in the hospital for a couple days, usually because of bacteria that have been spread to you from other persons. Also, things like surgery or catheters make you more vulnerable to get such infections.
Can these infections appear after discharge? And if so, are these infections included in the data reported to CDC?
Yes, so healthcare-associated infections can occur after discharge. There are the subset that are hospital onset and then the others that occur post-discharge. A good example is surgical site infection. If you've had a surgery and the wound gets infected, it often doesn't show the signs of infection until you've left the hospital. There are others as well. And for the example of surgical site infection, in fact, we do get that information up to 30 days post-discharge is part of the reporting of surgical site infections that hospitals do. Other types of infections that occur after discharge, we get some indication of how common they are from other surveillance systems we have, although we don't get that from every hospital.
And what are the common ways bacteria is spread in healthcare facilities?
Well, the most common way that we're always working to try to reduce is the contamination of the hands of healthcare workers. Their hands touch the patient, the patient's skin, which is contaminated with bacteria, or the bed rails, the overbed table, other places, what we call the patient care environment. All of those surfaces have bacteria which are specially adapted to cause infection in healthcare settings. Those bacteria get on the hands of the healthcare workers when they don't clean their hands, and that's one thing we're emphasizing all the time, is better attention to hand cleaning or hand hygiene. We recommend, of course, that doctors and nurses always use methods to clean their hands. The most common one in the healthcare setting that we recommend is alcohol-based hand rubs. These are very quick. They can be done in 30 seconds or less, and they're very effective. Some healthcare providers might have to clean their hands over 100 times in a shift, depending upon how many patients they might be caring for. But this is the main way that we think bacteria are getting from patient to patient, is on the hands of healthcare providers when they fail to clean their hands between patients. Another way, of course, is the environment. The surfaces I just mentioned, the bed rails, the room surfaces, the chair, those surfaces can be contaminated. Again, those surfaces can play a role in the getting the healthcare workers' hands contaminated, but also a new patient coming into that same room, or maybe in the emergency department where maybe new patients are coming in every few minutes. If that surface doesn't get clean, then sometimes the next patient can get the bacteria on them directly that way. Sometimes also devices or equipment that goes from room to room can carry the bacteria on it. But it's always through direct or indirect contact.
And according to CDC, at any given time, about 1 in 25 hospital patients has at least one healthcare-associated infection. Where, in which healthcare facilities, can we find the highest infection risk? And what is the infection rate?
Yeah, so a lot of this has to do with how vulnerable the patients are and also how many of these highly vulnerable patients are located close to one another. Some of the highest infection risks that we see are in long-term acute care hospitals. This means they're almost like long-term intensive care units. The average length of stay in these facilities in the United States is about 25 days. Often these patients have, even before they came to these hospitals, these special hospitals, they've already been in the intensive care unit of a regular hospital for sometimes weeks. They often come to these long-term acute care hospitals already colonized with multi-drug resistant bacteria. And they also often, you know, have either had surgery recently, or they have catheters in them, or they're on the ventilator. All these things are what we call invasive devices, and they allow the bacteria to get into the person and cause infection in that way. With that said, infection rates are still overall less than 10%. That's for any given infection, though. So many, many people, if not even the majority of long-term acute care hospital patients, will have at least one infection over their time because, again, they're often staying for 25 days or so. It becomes quite a risk. Fortunately, many of those infections can be treated quite effectively, but others have become highly resistant to antibiotics.
And how does that compare to other facilities, such as in long-term acute care?
Well, that is long-term acute care, and so those are the highest rates. Then in acute care hospitals, the rates are much lower, and generally things like routine surgeries, the infection rate is like 1% or less. One common, very common infection across all healthcare settings is called Clostridium difficile. It occurs about in a little less than 1% of all hospitalized patients in acute care hospitals. But acute care hospitals then have lower rates, and then still lower rates are in nursing homes. Nursing homes are a place where people do get infected, but remember that many of those patients can stay there for even years sometimes. So the overall day-to-day risk is much lower. So the highest in the long-term acute care hospital, medium in the acute care, and lowest in nursing homes.
Could you please tell us about antibiotic-resistant bacteria, which is the most common in hospitals?
Well, Clostridium difficile, although it's not, it is resistant to some antibiotics, but the resistance that it has is not necessarily to the drugs that we're using to treat it, okay? Most antibiotic resistance, when we talk about it, we're worried about it because it makes it harder to treat the infection. And so Clostridium difficile is a little bit different in that way, but it is the most common single cause of any healthcare-associated infection right now in the United States. But other very common ones include things like methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, or MRSA. That has been a long-standing problem, and Staphylococcus aureus can cause a lot of infections. Other multidrug-resistant gram-negative bacteria are of concern. One in particular is called carbapenem-resistant Enterobacteriaceae, or CRE. These are highly resistant gram-negative bacteria that can cause urinary tract infection or bloodstream infection or other infections as well. And some of them can even become virtually untreatable with all the antibiotics we have currently.
And can these infections be prevented, these infections of resistant bacteria?
Yes. We recommend, first and foremost, is to do the things that prevent any kind of infection. I've mentioned to you surgical site infections. There are procedures that people can do to try to prevent anyone from getting any kind of surgical site infection. It includes using the right amount of antibiotic just before the surgery, careful hygiene we've talked about already, and other careful care of the surgical wound. There's other things you can do to prevent other infections, like the infections from catheters and things. A second thing is to prevent the transmission of the multidrug resistant organisms going from one patient to another. We've talked about cleaning your hands. The healthcare providers should clean their hands. We even recommend that patients speak up and tell their providers, did you clean your hands? Or maybe that we know that can be difficult to talk that way to the provider. You can even say, well, The CDC says I'm supposed to ask you if you've cleaned your hands. We also want the hospitals to help make the patient feel more comfortable talking to the doctor or nurse that way, in a polite way, to asking them to clean their hands. That's so important for preventing the transmission of these multi-drug resistant organisms from one patient to another. And then finally, it's very important that antibiotics be used very carefully. We call this antibiotic stewardship. And this will prevent some infections directly, like Clostridium difficile infection. It actually is caused because of antibiotics. So if you use less antibiotic, you'll prevent some of those infections directly. And then as we use, if we're more careful about antibiotic use, we'll have less antibiotic resistance.
Well, we've heard that, well, with hand cleaning is so important that you recently launched a campaign called Clean Hands Count. So I guess that was a very significant campaign and about cleaning our hands. Would you like to say anything about that campaign?
Yeah, I've mentioned some of it already in my remarks. It is something that we have been talking about for a long time, of course. It's been known about for over 100 years how important it is in hospitals and healthcare settings for providers to clean their hands. And yet we still have problems. In some studies, it appears that providers, healthcare workers, might clean their hands less than 50% of the time they're supposed to. Well, that's not because they're bad people. It doesn't mean that they're just forgetful either. It's just that there's a lot going on in healthcare all the time. You know, there's so many. If you've had a loved one or yourself have been in the hospital recently, especially in an intensive care unit, you know those places are just amazingly high tech. A lot going on all the time. A lot of things that the providers are thinking about all the time. So it's easy to start to overlook something as basic as cleaning your hands. So yes, we launched this campaign back on May 5th, which was actually World Hand Hygiene Day, a day that WHO also acknowledges. And it's a campaign that really is trying to get the message out to this generation of healthcare providers of just how important it is, and also to patients, to get patients to feel empowered, like I said before, to even ask their providers, their healthcare workers, their doctors, their nurses, did you clean your hands before you examined me? Do you mind just doing it again in front of me? Those types of things for patients to feel like they can be a part of this. And also we talked there again about the importance of technique. Alcohol-based hand sanitizers or hand rubs do make it a lot easier, and they are very effective. They are not associated with resistance or any concerns like that. The hand washing works too well, but it just takes a lot more effort, and alcohol can just be applied so quickly. And so that is our recommended method for cleaning hands in the healthcare setting. And as we talked about, some healthcare providers might have to clean their hands over 100 times in a shift. So it's important that they have a method for doing so very quickly. It's important that they get the right amount of the alcohol-based hand rub on the hands. If you get the right amount on your hands, you'll probably do a good job. If you get the right amount, your hands should stay wet for about 20 seconds. And you want to, of course, get that over all the surfaces of the hands. Some areas commonly missed are the fingers, the tips of the fingers and the crevices, sometimes the backs of the hands and things like that. So we want to get all that covered. And if you allow them to dry, then you're good to go. So there are ways of making patients safer through cleaning your hands, and that's what that Clean Hands Count campaign is all about.
And is there any global surveillance network or effort underway to reduce the threat of antibiotic resistance?
Well, there is not one overall unified global system. There is, though, increasing collaboration between countries. We work closely with Europe in terms of coordinating our actions. Examples, just last week or earlier this week it was, I think, that we released a notice of a problem of an antibiotic-resistant organism both in England and here in the United States, not that we have the same problem here, but just warning people that it may be coming, and it's an antibiotic-resistant yeast or Candida species. So that's just one of the examples of coordination. Certainly WHO has given recommendations about what kind of surveillance to do. I think CDC also sees the need for countries to develop their own surveillance systems that are adapted to their settings, that attend to their specific problems. Everyone, I think, agrees that we want to be doing surveillance on both the types of antibiotic resistance, numbers of infections, but then also on the antibiotic use, because antibiotics are an important national and world resource. The activity of antibiotics is a international resource. And as these organisms all become resistant, we lose that resource, and it's something we need to preserve for everyone on this planet and for future generations as well. So it is very key that we coordinate in these ways in terms of the appropriate surveillance.
Thank you very much, Professor McDonald. It's been a pleasure to have you in Microscopio.
Oh, thank you.
Okay.
Goodbye.
Thank you. Goodbye.